We know the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows we know the law is unconstitutional. And yet we're supposed to pretend like nothing happened and comply with an illegal law. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a great little read, a frustrating little read today by Jameson Lopp. The show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite. Swan Bitcoin is the place to buy. I just bought some Bitcoin over there just the other day, and I have my regular stack. Not only can you buy Bitcoin, you can set up an IRA, you can set up a vault, you can set up a business account and pay employee salaries and benefits, have white glove service, you name it. Check them out, swanbitcoin.com/guy. And then you got to keep it safe. You got to keep your Bitcoin safe. That's why I'm partnering with CoinKite, and I always, always, always advocate a solid, like highly respectable, trusted hardware wallet. Get it from a Bitcoin-only company. Get it from somebody who's been in this space for a decade. CoinKite is literally it for the most cyberpunk and longest-running hardware wallet. And don't forget my discount code, Bitcoin Audible, right in the show notes. But today's read is about something that I wasn't even aware of, actually, but not totally surprising considering the amount of legal action and the amount of law that is being written and executed and implemented and that we don't find out until afterward. And it feels like it's increasingly become the burden of the people, of the businesses, of all of us to fight in court endlessly with this forever stream of encroaching on our rights and just hilariously to the point of like comedy in both the sad and tragic sense, trampling all over the Constitution and not even caring. I mean, we have a justice of the Supreme Court talking about how unfortunate it is that the First Amendment is hamstringing the government's ability to censor bad information online, which is such a joke in the context of what matters, in the context of the problem, and in the context, obviously, of the whole reason this country exists in the first place. I really kind of think a belief like that should disqualify you from being a justice. But anyway, we have another development that I'm very happy Jameson Lopp wrote about because I wasn't even aware of it, and it's hard to stay up on all of these things, and I'm not huge. I don't like politics. I don't like digging into all that stuff, and it usually just makes me angry, and I'm angry for the whole guy's rant after this. I don't mean to be, and I don't want to be, but it is what it is. It's, you know, hearing the article, I assure you, will probably not make you feel happy. It won't make you feel like the government's on your side or that they respect any of your rights or even just the law, just literally the court verdict that tells them that they are breaking the law. But I won't lead too much. We will let Jameson Lopp lay out the case, and then we will talk about it after. And there will be a little bit of a call to action, and the link will be in the show notes. So if you want to get a head start and see what it is, click on it, check it out. And one last note, I do curse a lot in this one as well, but I worked very hard to make sure that I censored all of the F word. So just a note there for anybody who has kids listening, I do say shit quite a few times. But with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, Congress is Unconstitutionally Criminalizing Privacy. An explanation of the Corporate Transparency Act and a call to action for those affected by it. By Jameson Lopp. On December 11, 2020, with a bipartisan veto-proof majority, the U.S. Senate joined the House of Representatives in passing the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, a roughly 1,500-page bill which included 20 pages describing the Corporate Transparency Act. The CTA requires a report be filed with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, that identifies every beneficial owner of any company formed in the U.S. or any foreign company that registers to do business in the U.S. FinCEN defines, quote, beneficial owner as, quote, any individual who, directly or indirectly, either exercises substantial control over such reporting company or owns or controls at least 25% of the ownership interests of such reporting company. The CTA eventually took effect on January 1, 2024. More than 30 million existing entities are expected to be subject to the CTA, and approximately 5 million new entities are expected to join that number each year. According to FinCEN, roughly 500,000 reports were filed in the first 2 months of 2024. What must be reported? Every report must include each beneficial owner's name, date of birth, current address, and unique identifying number, such as a social security number. Existing entities will be required to report this information by January 1, 2025. The report will be required for newly formed entities at the time of formation. Finally, a reporting company will need to update their information on file upon any change in beneficial ownership. Who can access this information? FinCEN will store the information in a private database. It will be made available to federal and state law enforcement agencies pursuant to an appropriate request. The Department of the Treasury, the custodian of the records through FinCEN, has its own broad and separate authorization to use the information, including for purposes related to tax administration. Foreign law enforcement also may request information from the database. Finally, financial institutions will have access to the database for customer due diligence purposes. It's hard to put a number on just how many people and organizations will be able to access this data, and that's being optimistic that the private database remains private. I think it's safe to assume the database is connected to the internet. After all, the process of submitting your disclosure information is via FinCEN's website. Unfortunately, I suspect it's only a matter of time before this information gets compromised and falls into the wrong hands. Customer due diligence requirements for financial institutions will be updated to conform to the requirements of the CTA and to take into account access by financial institutions to the information compiled under the CTA. This means that the establishment of any entity account with a financial institution will require compliance, making non-compliance impossible. What are the penalties for non-compliance? Failure to provide complete information required under the CTA or willfully providing false information comes with steep consequences. Civil penalties of up to $500 per day, criminal fines up to $10,000, and imprisonment for up to 2 years. Why does this matter? I'm sure there are a wide variety of reasons why beneficial owners of companies would prefer to retain their privacy. I can only speak for myself. As I laid out 5 years ago, a substantial portion of my own privacy is built upon the fact that the U.S. allows for protecting your privacy with legal entities, such as corporations and trusts. The wonderful aspect of using such entities as proxies for my ownership of publicly registered assets, such as real estate and vehicles, is that it keeps my name out of the public databases and data brokers used by attackers who leverage open source intelligence, or OSINT, to track down targets. This is because the actual ownership of said entities is only written down on the privately held documents defining the governance and operation of the entity. These documents don't exist in a database anywhere that can be queried or hacked. In short, we're facing an immense broadening of the attack surface against folks who protect their privacy via legal entities. Corporate Transparency Act ruled unconstitutional. A legal challenge was brought by the National Small Business Association, or NSBA, and one of its members against the Secretary of the U.S. Treasury Department. As a result, earlier this month, a U.S. federal judge ruled, Quote, "The Corporate Transparency Act is unconstitutional because it cannot be justified as an exercise of Congress's enumerated powers. This conclusion makes it unnecessary to decide whether the CTA violates the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments." Burke's ruling suggested that there was not a clear enough case that the CTA was supported on the grounds of national security. FinCEN responds. A few days after the ruling that the CTA is unconstitutional, FinCEN posted the following notice, quote, "Other than the particular individuals and entities subject to the court's injunction as specified below, reporting companies are still required to comply with the law and file beneficial ownership reports as provided in FinCEN's regulations." What the f***? We know the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows we know the law is unconstitutional. And yet we're supposed to pretend like nothing happened and comply with an illegal law. What's next? It looks like legal appeals are ongoing. In 2023, the median time for the 11th Circuit to resolve a case was over 9 months. However, the deadline by which 30-plus million companies must file their initial report under the CTA is January 1st, 2025. Not a particularly optimistic set of circumstances for a timely resolution of this matter. For the time being, lawyers advise that the effect of the Treasury Department's defeat in federal court is only unconstitutional as applied to the plaintiffs in that particular case, member organizations of the National Small Business Association who were members prior to March 1, 2024. The government's position is that everyone else has to comply in the meantime. Unless, of course, we bring separate lawsuits and win separate victories of our own. This poses some uncomfortable questions. Do I obey an unconstitutional order under the threat of penalty? Do I cross my fingers and hope the courts resolve this logically and speedily? Do I have to sue Janet Yellen in order to not have my rights tread upon? Is it worth attempting a class action lawsuit against the Department of Treasury? If you are affected by the CTA and are interested in fighting back against this government overreach, please reach out via my contact form. We know there are over 30 million affected entities. I am surely not alone in my concerns. I have already spent a lot of resources on attorneys to defend my privacy. If funding a lawsuit is the latest requirement, then so be it. I don't know what will happen over the course of this year, but I do know one thing. Privacy is not a crime. This show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. If you're looking for a place to buy Bitcoin and you have not done it yet, if you're looking for a place to learn about Bitcoin, to plug your business into Bitcoin, for white glove support, for people to ask questions to basically feel like you have a friend, like if you don't have a Bitcoin guy and you need one, Swan Bitcoin has lots of Bitcoin guys, and all of them were the Bitcoin guy before they started working for Swan, and they continue to be. That's why they were hired. So if you're looking for that knowledgeable Bitcoin person in your life, Swan literally created that as a service. And they have so many resources. They are Bitcoin only, so they're not going to tell you. In fact, they go extensively into why. Like, obviously, they could make tons more in fees if they just made a shitcoin exchange and they just encourage you to trade all the time and told you about Duckcoin and Dogecoin 2.0. But they will thoroughly and solidly explain why that is a terrible idea and that they are looking for a long-term relationship to be there, to be the customer's connection to a Bitcoin standard, and want their position, their savings to always grow easily, automatically, and safely. Check them out at swanbitcoin.com/guy. The link will be right in the show notes. Holy crap. This is infuriating. And it just goes to show how many different problems we have at one time and just how bad our political and bureaucratic environment is. This constant encroaching, this incessant expansion of powers that is somehow turned into this, we have the power unless you challenge us sort of environment. And where we're constantly being essentially exported. We're essentially exporting our political rules, our political system, our sovereignty to international and global agencies and bureaucratic institutions like the WEF and the IMF and all of these things that are increasing, and NATO, that are increasingly making rules. Like the WHO is a great example. There's this, they made statements and demanded that certain actions be taken, and then they kind of pretended like they were hands off and they didn't do anything, and they'd be like, well, I don't have any authority, we didn't do anything. But then all of the government stepped in line, and it was as if the very notion of even asking, like, why do we have to say, do anything the WHO says, was some form of treason. The clear chokehold that the political system has on the media and the narrative structure, the exposure and transmission of information, is so clearly poisonous and awful, like crazy, crazy dangerous. And then we have the Department of Treasury and FinCEN just kind of like arbitrarily deciding that they have the right to just spy and just have ubiquitous information across the board. This is, and I love what like Burke's conclusion of this, the judge in the ruling about the fact that this is obviously unconstitutional and that it doesn't even matter. It's so blatantly unconstitutional that the Treasury Department and Congress does not have the right to even like engage in this sort of challenge, like engage in this sort of activity, that they don't have the right to even make the decision as to whether or not you're allowed to do this or that you're being forced to do this. Like, so that it's so unconstitutional that we don't even have to know whether it's the First, Fourth, or Fifth Amendment that is blatantly being violated. It's just obviously got nothing to do with the powers that are explicitly granted and heavily restricted to Congress under the Constitution. Congress just doesn't have the power to do that. Then another major problem it shows is how absurd our legal system has become, that we pass an arbitrary National Defense Authorization Act with 1,500 pages of bullshit, and in it is essentially this sort of blank check warrant for any and all legal entities to just, we have to know every piece of information. We essentially have this infinite open subpoena for all potential information and all potential entities that have anything to do with your company, just blanket, just across the board. You know how, like, you have to get a warrant to get information from someone? That they have the benefit of owning their own information and owning their own private world and their room? This is essentially, oh, we have warrants for everything. If you are a legal entity in any form or fashion, not only do we have a warrant, but we're going to send you a form and you're just going to fill it all out. We're not even going to come to your home with police officers with a gun and show you that we have any sort of probable cause to find any of this information, which is none of our f***ing business. Instead, we are going to demand that you fill out all of this information and fill in all of the blanks for us. And if you refuse, then we will destroy your life and steal all of your money from your bank account. And anyone who thinks this is not explicitly being used, especially when it's put in the National Defense Authorization Act, you know 100% what these f***ers are up to. They want this information so that they can put pressure on people, so that they know who to censor, they know whose life to make difficult, they know who to red flag when the wrong political opinions get posted on social media, when the wrong medical facts get posted on a platform that people can watch, that millions of people have access to watching the video of. This has nothing to do with compliance. This has nothing to do with safety. This is about controlling the narrative and so that they can quietly and behind the scenes destroy people who get in their way. And rather than having to filter this explicitly on social media, which they are doing anyway, and that they are getting caught doing red-handed like 100 times over, they want to be able to go one avenue deeper so they can choke the people behind the platforms, so they can choke the people behind the handles. They can choke people behind the entities that are running the software and running the machines that are keeping this information that they think is inconvenient for them from being able to be hosted in the United States. This is just tyranny, plain and simple. And it will do nothing for our national defense, but quite the opposite. It makes this a communist nation. We are so, like, we're in a really weird place where a few really bad laws moving in the wrong direction, we are definitely at a tipping point. In the next few years, it's either going to get massively, massively worse, or we're going to actually put up a barrier and throw a wrench in the gears to stop some really critical things from happening before we have the technology to actually get around them and the network adoption necessary to stop this shit from happening. On top of the fact that this bill and this quote-unquote private database, which is going to be used by a crap ton of different people, is going to create this class of people who have the power to influence. Like, financial institutions are just going to have access to this, which means that in the context of, like, look at the trucker protests and everything, this means that they're never going to have any ambiguity. They're going to easily be able to just call this database and find out whose bank account they have to shut down or whose bank account suddenly gets paused because of, there's a fraud alert. I don't know, somebody from the wrong zip code logged into this machine, and I'm sorry, it's going to take you 3 weeks to fill out this form, come in, show your ID, you're going to have to speak to somebody at the bank, and then we're going to start going through our process, but our process is very complicated, and it's going to take a while to get your money back. That is what this is about. This is about trapping everything that is inconvenient for them in a bureaucratic and legal black hole that just destroys their life without even executing any sort of legal attack. And then give them the foundation to actually go at them in a massive way from a legal perspective for not giving up that information. This is about power and control, 100% top to bottom. And for those who do not think it or do not see the blatantly obvious course of action and the reasons they want this shit, they're just horrifically, horrifically naive. And I respect Jameson Lopp for still trying to be a little diplomatic about this. There's a quote, actually, a section from this that says it's hard to put a number on just how many people and organizations will have access to this data, because there's not. We have no clue how many people are going to be able to access this, and this is going to be public in no time. This is going to be hacked. This might even be released on purpose. Who knows? But the Treasury Department has already been hacked. But anyway, back to the quote. It says, and that's being optimistic that the private database remains private. I think it is safe to assume the database is connected to the internet. After all, the process of submitting your disclosure information is via FinCEN's website. Unfortunately, I suspect it's only a matter of time before this information gets compromised and falls into the wrong hands. It's already in the wrong hands. The evil, shitty people that will use it to attack innocent people already have the information. We are submitting it directly to them. The very people who do not care about the law, that do not care about the rights and the protections of the people, of the businesses, of everybody utilizing that critical form of privacy protection. The people who do not care about human rights in any way, shape, or form and have proven it. The people who are willing to commit a criminal act by knowingly and publicly stating that they will prosecute and attack someone for not following an order that has been declared unconstitutional and thereby criminal publicly, is totally okay with still destroying people, with still attacking people, with still hurting them, stealing from them, and getting them put in cages with a single hope that they can get away with it before anything, any other legal course actually gets to protect the people's basic f***ing rights. They are the wrong hands. I don't think this can be put any more cleanly than the way Jameson Lopp put it. What the f***? We know the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows the law is unconstitutional. FinCEN knows we know the law is unconstitutional. And yet we're supposed to pretend like nothing happened and comply with an illegal law. That is what a mafia does. That is a criminal. They just publicly admitted to committing a crime and engaging in ongoing criminal activity. This could not be a more perfect example of why our engagement with the legal and political system should be simply to cause them frustration, to slow them down, to throw wrenches in the gears, and then build a technological environment that obsoletes them, because they will never be better people. They will always be shitty tyrants. We will never stop their desire to get as much and as thorough and omnipotent control as they possibly can get. They do not care. They do not even consider restrictions on their power, aside from the fact that they might get bad publicity and piss a lot of people off. That is the only thing that gives them pause from taking complete and total control of anything that they believe they need control over. This is why if you have an entity, if you have a business, a S Corp, whatever you've got, and you fall under this, which you do, I will have the link in the show notes to fill out his contact form to partner in, to get in with this, with LOP, and consider as Bitcoiners how dangerous this is. This means that there is no way you can protect your home address in a world where Bitcoin is going to be worth an incredible amount of money and where laws and basic human rights and property rights are not being enforced, where squatters are going in and literally stealing houses from people and the owners are being arrested. And as we move into an era where we are going to have massive banking crises, you don't think the amount of population, the amount of the people who are willing to suddenly pick up a gun or a knife and go steal from someone else because they need food, because they can't do anything anymore because their government welfare check doesn't pay for jack shit? You think their morals are going to suddenly blossom? Our last, rather feeble means of getting a thin line of defense in the form of privacy for that environment is literally being taken away. And the consequences of a loss of privacy, the consequences of this sort of thing are something that doesn't happen right now. So it seems like no big deal. And then it doesn't happen next year, and it doesn't happen next year. And everything seems to go along pretty fine. And then when it's a problem all at once, and it's usually a huge problem. It's very, very infrequently a tiny problem. And there may just come a day where it seems psychotic now to even consider spending like $10,000 on making an entity or a trust or, you know, working with a company to remove your information offline or online. That might seem crazy now, but there may very well come a day where it costs you vastly more than that in pain, in frustration, in time, just to attempt to stop something from happening. And it's clear that the political environment is not going to protect you, because the political environment will happily just trample over your rights and violate an obvious legal defense of yours while forcing you to go through court, while forcing you to file a lawsuit. The fine for noncompliance is $500 a day. The fine for a lawsuit is like $10,000 a day. That is the penalty. That is stealing from you not only your capital, but the time that it would take to go through all of this bullshit. How on earth do we just let a government institution, let a bureaucracy like this openly break the law? How did we get here? And this is one of those things too, when I'm talking with people and they're always talking about like, oh, we need law and we need regulation and all of this stuff, and that's why we need the government to do it. And I've never, the framing is always backwards to me. The more and more power the government has, the more and more power these regulatory agencies have, the less and less we have rule of law, the less and less we have regulation of the people that actually need to be regulated. The less and less protection we have, the less and less consistency we have, the less and less the law makes any sense at all. It becomes self-contradictory. It becomes contradictory 100 different ways, where you have to do one, you have to do the this huge list of things to comply with one alphabet agency, and then you actually have to do completely opposite things, or you can't do anything on list A in order to comply with bureaucracy B. And the only reason why we don't get hit with multiple felonies every single day is because they don't care. They only use it for power. They're not trying to stop petty criminals. They're not trying to make a safe environment for us. The only times in which that actually occurs is when there just happen to be good people in these institutions that attempt to do their job and believe the stupid idea, the naive notion that these entities are actually there to do something good, to actually make things better. They're not. This is about power and control. It always is. And so this is why the perspective of that, of like, oh, we need regulation to keep corporations in check. It's like regulatory bodies are how corporations destroy competition. Regulatory bodies, huge centralized regulatory bodies, is how you shrink, massively shrink the attack surface by which a corporation needs to see, excuse me, that's not the term. Shrink the attack. It's not the attack surface, because it opens the attack surface very, very broadly, but it shrinks the levers of control they need in order to actually get the power, in order to actually commit the attack. I mean, just think about it from the notion of customers versus the regulatory agency. If they have to appeal to customers, then they have 100 million people that they have to appeal to and they have to convince. And there's millions of avenues in which the separate information may get through, or that these people may be reached, and all of these different avenues have to be attacked individually. But as soon as you make a regulatory agency with just a handful of people that waste billions of dollars every year doing the same job and failing at it every single year, but still, of course, wasting the billions of dollars and then demanding that they need more in order to actually do even a modest job, well, now it's super easy. They know exactly who they need to control. They know exactly whose favor they need to obtain, what the pressure over who they need to have. They don't need to get leverage over 100 million people or a whole bunch of social media platforms, chat apps, media entities, like all sorts, all the numerous plethora of ways by which we get information and we exchange details, and the numerous individual agencies, the individual companies that would, like the Better Business Bureau and the stamping companies, that would risk their reputation and the entire business plan to stamp the bad behavior of one institution as if it's good, as if it's approved by them. Well, no, now the tax surface is like super easy. I'm just going to get leverage over these three people and we're good. And politicians are the easiest people to buy, right up to the collapse, the global historic collapse of the insolvent mortgage-backed security industry, the cataclysmic insolvency and irresponsible fraudulent behavior right up to the second it happened. Regulatory bodies were listing them as triple A. That is not regulation. That is not a centralized, powerful regulatory body is the opposite of regulation. It is the opposite of the rule of law. It is the rule of the wealthy and powerful over everyone else with an easy, simple avenue of attack. It's just handing it to them on a silver platter. It's important to understand, too, that this is all going to get worse. Like, you know, we talked about it in the past on the show. is that privacy is going to be a huge, huge thing. And it's always been one of the hardest trade-offs for me in Bitcoin's life cycle, so to speak, or in the development and operation of the Bitcoin system, that Bitcoin does not have built-in privacy. But no matter which way I spin it or try to think about it, I still think the primitives on auditability overrule the privacy risk when it comes from an on-chain perspective. And it's specifically because the only way this was ever going to scale anyway was off-chain. And the privacy of off-chain, the e-caches of the world, and also understand that this will essentially mean that they can, without any evidence of a crime, without any operation without any evidence of any specific crime or wrongdoing, this makes any eCash entity essentially out of compliance already. Granted, there's probably a handful of other ways that they're going to go after them, but it already just kind of creates illegality in so many different ways. On top of this, with, you know, a lot of laws that have happened really in just kind of like the past 20 years, the degree of overreach that our government has taken that arguably really started with the Patriot Act, especially from a national defense. Total surveillance is our only mode of, or is critical for national defense, the complete and utter violation of the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. It just basically those amendments are meaningless now, especially in the context of, like, even if a court explicitly rules that something is blatantly unconstitutional, defense is still going to engage. It doesn't matter. It will still take the power that Congress, because Congress said, I mean, this is total rule by masters. Like, this is not even in the theory of democracy, in the spirit of a republic. This is nothing. This is just the absolute breakdown of law. And we're seeing this constantly. This is all over the place. I mean, I don't mean to, like, really single this out as some special thing. This is becoming normal. That's the scary thing. It is normal for all of our bureaucratic regulatory institutions, Congress, our political environment, the counterfeit class, to blatantly and consistently violate everything about the rule of law for their power, and that they believe, and the framing is 100% unambiguous, they believe that they are the law, they believe that they have the power, unless we somehow prove that they don't. And nothing about this country was even slightly ambiguous about the fact that it's the perfect f***ing opposite. They are the ones that have to prove that they have any authority whatsoever to do this, and it is us who decide. But I increasingly think, you know, a lot of people, anarchists and libertarians, I want to make an appeal to political action. And I know that sounds like an oxymoron, especially in contrast to everything that I have said. And obviously my take on what the political thing is. And my brother and I go back and forth quite a bit on this. He's very much in the don't vote, don't participate at all because it's illegitimate, it's immoral, etc. And I think there's a very strong argument for that case. And I think it makes a lot of, I guess, theoretical sense from the context of, you know, being contradictory to the notion is that, you know, you're never going to fix the mafia but from within. But I don't think it applies very as cleanly as it seems to in theory, for the exact same reason why, because it's purely defensive. It's purely defensive. It is not a waste of resources to defend yourself from an attacker, to slow down your attacker, to tie your attacker's shoes together and watch them trip over themselves. Now, yes, it does cost us resources. It does mean that we have to spend time trying to figure out how to tie their shoes together instead of doing something else to solve the problem. But doing something else to solve the problem is always going to take a long time. Like, solving the problems is very difficult. We need people also slowing them down. And I think you could argue the exact same. If we argue that any sort of political action, that lawsuits, that voting, that anything to throw a wrench into the gears is completely wasteful, is contradictory to kind of the philosophy of it, and therefore useless, if we want to argue that because it's a waste of time, because, you know, we shouldn't have to, well, of course, but then you would kind of also have to make, it would lend itself, if you applied that argument kind of more broadly, that I shouldn't have to have a gun, that I shouldn't have to learn how to defend myself or my family. I shouldn't have to put in a security camera system to protect myself because the attacker is the one who's not supposed to attack me. But I don't have that choice. I don't have the luxury of pretending that they're not attacking. Sure, it is an artificial cost. It is a quote-unquote waste of resources that without them I would not have to engage in. But because they are attacking, it's not a waste of resources. There are normal restrictions and challenges and difficulties of the universe, of technology, of just the difficulty of being alive and sustaining yourself and your family. But then there's also people who will attack you. There's also people who will just want to destroy you, who are evil and will try to do you harm. Therefore, we have to spend resources on protecting ourselves from those people. As bad and as stupid as the political system is, we can slow it down. We can cause it to be allow it to put its foot in its mouth. And I think we should be spending, I mean, that's largely what X and Twitter is. It's become a forum to throw tomatoes at them, to publicly embarrass them. And we need to do that. We need to keep doing that. And I think we need to engage further. We need to slow them down. We need to vote them out. And that's why I actually think the Libertarian Party strategy, as much as I am not a political action person from a lot of different contexts, like in the way that I've thought about it for a long time, like I like the idea that Ron Paul is my last vote and that I don't want to participate in a stupid, absurd, corrupt system. But at the same time, the system is hugely multifaceted. It has lots of conflicting incentives. It's a leviathan. It's a big bloated mess. And oddly enough, as much as that works toward making tyranny worse, it can actually also work against their ability to find consensus and have a cohesive front to fight on for all of the tyrants. Essentially, it allows us a way to set tyrants against each other and to put roadblocks up between their communication efforts, between their coordination efforts, between their various authorities. We want FinCEN and the SEC fighting each other. We want them not being able to agree on who has, you know, authority over what sort of information or what part of the industry. And, you know, we won lawsuits. We won a lawsuit in the 90s. Like, the cypherpunks have an incredible history of actually winning in court against intelligence agencies, against government overreach in protection of privacy. And if we hadn't won those things, sure, the cypherpunks were working their asses off to build privacy-preserving technologies, to build separate networks. But a lot of this stuff even happened 10, 15 years before Bitcoin even existed. What would have happened if it had been made illegal? What would have happened? Like, how much more difficult is our job, is our ability to even build these things, to even openly discuss and coordinate these things, to organize? And how much longer does it take to get to that future if we can't just slash their tires from time to time, at least just slow them down? And I realize they do not leave us many avenues to do that, but I think of what avenues exist, and this is also why I think the Libertarian Party strategy, which I brought up but actually didn't finish the thought, the Libertarian Party strategy is so powerful, is because they're looking long term. They're not trying to win the presidential election. They're not trying to get like authoritative top down power. They're trying to put new people in the environment at the small area, at the lowest thing, at the county district, as the sheriff level. How can we find another Libertarian at that position, at that level? And how can we get another one into the House of Representatives? Just one to be a voice. And when they stand up and say something sensible, obvious, like blatant common sense that people are waiting, desperately waiting for common sense to spill out of that stupid system, it becomes something to rally around. And when you have multiple voices in elections that are actually winnable, where if you put $10,000 or $50,000 into it, you could totally get this district. You could totally get this county. You could totally, we might even be able to kick out Elizabeth Warren. I really hope so. That would be wonderful to just watch her. I would pay money to watch her cry, to see that evil authoritarian bitch finally get punished, to finally lose her power, her influence, her I'm so important pedestal, for the number of people she's hurt, and the number of people that she's openly attacked, and the amount of damage that she's trying to do to the basic freedoms and the health of this country. So part of this is me trying to make the case to you guys, but part of it is also trying to convince me that I should, that it's worth doing something like that. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that argument about the kind of the political action side of things and what course we have. I don't even know how I would fit into this, but I feel like I want to, if there's a class action lawsuit, I don't know, I want to be a part of the group that is sticking it to them, that puts them in the place they are supposed to be in, which is our service provider, not our master. You do not compromise with a bully. You do not ask permission to a tyrant. But you know, that only goes so far if you catch the attention and they come after you with the stick. It's a mess. It's a mess, but I don't know, how bad does it get? You know? How bad does it get before everybody just says, screw it. Like, I'm not playing this game. Like, it's going to have to get bad. And I think it's because of how hard it is. How hard it is to say, like, I'm just not paying this year. I'm just not listening. I'm just not going to do what you say because of the risk. And I think the level of risk of normal operations basically has to get to a point that it equals or gets really, really close to the risk of standing up before people do it en masse. And unfortunately, that probably means a massive amount of pain, a massive amount of rights violations, a massive amount of innocent people being hurt, which I guess is not really historically new. That's kind of, that's how things go. Something has to be done. This system is nuts. This system is going to, it's feeding back on itself. It feels like really, really quickly now, like a lot faster. And the degree to which just kind of blind, you know, like the Patriot Act sort of stuff was, you know, once upon a time, it seemed few and far between. Like it took a really long time for those sorts of things to land. And now I feel like there's like just this constant stream of like two or three of them every 6 months, like just this constant stream. Like we've got COSA happening right now, which is a different attack on a large, like the same thing. It's COSA is basically requiring that everyone have, they were just sponsored by 50 senators, that everyone has to be able to, has to show their ID for access to the internet. That you have to give up all of your information for, to establish an internet connection. Like it is the formal enforcement of an entirely closed internet by choking and creating KYC at the LSP layer. And this is a bill. This is a bill right now. Like, so after the CTA is a problem, this is all, this is also happening. Like, we're building. The pressure is building. And I hope that we can, I hope that we can turn it around or put a massive force in the opposite direction to make them scared of continuing to violate the basic law, of continuing to attack innocent people. And they absolutely should be afraid. They should be afraid of committing evil. But anyway, that's just my two cents. That worked up today. I hope you, as the last couple episodes, I've just been getting angry. I don't want to be angry. It's just so frustrating. I want to be the happy, optimistic guy. And in a lot of ways, I am optimistic. But it's just, and you know, maybe it's, again, it's, it could be visibility. You know, it could just be that we see all of this. And, you know, is the resistance to it, or the essentially defense from it, also growing? Like, is our ability to organize without needing a freaking legal entity, like, growing to a point where we can pull this off, where we can actually get around this, the constant encroachment in the legal area? And maybe that's an interesting part of the problem, too, if you think about it, is that maybe the reason they feel so desperate is because they're losing the stranglehold, is that they kind of had this passive compliance and, more direct power, in the sense that people didn't question their position. People weren't trying to, because, you know, it also makes a lot of sense that as their power and their authority becomes illegitimate, it becomes seen as illegitimate, that just normal crime, that like more bad people would do bad things. And I think a lot of people point to that and be like, oh, well, the government was keeping us safe. When that's not really the issue. The government has taught them to be immoral and been a horrible example, and then created an environment where they never actually learned it, and then released it. They created an authoritative environment. And then when you let go of some of that authority, inevitably, more people are going to commit crimes because now the things that the market would have put in to protect against those people and the market that would have taught them and given them the very feedback needed to prove to them that evil behavior is stupid and unproductive simply wasn't there. It's very akin to saying that you have to have the zoo or all the animals would die because if you let the animals out, they will all die. But no, the zoo was the thing that made all of the animals unable to survive in the wild. Like, it's very similar in this sort of situation when you have, you know, the rule of law breaking down because the government becomes lawless, just like tyranny and just kind of like arbitrary power in this bloated bureaucratic mess. As that starts to become dysfunctional and separate out, you have a lot more people become violent and commit crime, but it's because they grew up in the zoo. Like, it's because they grew up in the equivalent of not having the environment that actually dealt with it. And so, God, ungodly amounts of capital wasted on this stupid apparatus that ended up biting us in the ass. They ended up doing the exact opposite of keeping us safe, did the exact opposite of providing a reliable legal environment and stable law. So, I want to be the optimist. I don't want to sound like Alex Jones every time I do a freaking podcast. So I'll try to do better. But thank you guys. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Jameson Lopp for this article. Lopp is always like a wonderful resource, and he doesn't take shit, and he doesn't compromise when people challenge, you know, what he thinks. A lot of respect for that. And that goes with things that I don't agree with Lopp on. Like, I really appreciate somebody who, you know, takes their stance on it and then they actually apply and they make their argument for why they think it applies this way. When a whole bunch of people come in and say, well, you're stupid and you're not going to do it this way, and they try to pressure them to basically bend to what they want, they restate their point and they just keep going. Lopp has always been out there fighting a good fight. So I salute you, Sir Jameson Lopp, and I'll catch you guys on the next episode. Don't forget to check out Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite, supporters of this show. And thank you so, so much for everyone who shares this out. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel. And don't forget to check out the Keat broadcast channel, where I am I'm making this the hub for all of my content. So if you're looking for the Guy Swan network of stuff, you can get it all on that Keat channel. The Paralink is still good, and it is publicly posted on my Twitter and Noster account. So check it out. I'll try to have the link to the exact post in the show notes. And that'll do it. That'll do it for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. People have only as much liberty as they have the intelligence to want and the courage to take. Emma Goldman.